This is a MyCrestandNow.com on-air segment. Full interview between myself, Jensen Shields, and Theo Fleury. First of all, I want to say a big thank you to Chief Jason Louis for inviting me to the tail end of this workshop where many Lower Kootenai Band members had the opportunity of hearing Theo Fleury's tale about his hardships both on and off the ice, and of course, the story about his recovery and where he is today. Without further ado, here is my interview with our beloved guest.
What brought you to Lower Kootenai Band, the Creston Valley? It seems kind of off the beaten path, but here you are.
Well, I've been to over 420 communities all over Canada.
Wow.
Yeah. And, geez, this is my 11th year of doing this. And, you know, it's kind of random, but if they ask us, we show up.
Excellent.
Yeah. And, you know, the Aboriginal community, the Indigenous community of Canada, you know, needs a lot of healing, you know, from, you know, the residential school and, you know, all that stuff that's happened. And so, you know, I bring a different sort of perspective to, and, you know, organically, by visiting 400 and some communities, guess what's happened?
I believe you've learned a lot of things too.
Well, I've healed.
You've healed as well.
Yeah, of course.
So it's a two-way street.
Yeah. You know, I was taught about these tools that were left behind by the grandmothers and the grandfathers and the creator. So, you know, the drum, the smudge, the sweat lodge, powwow, singing, dancing, sun dance. You know, all of these
traditions
that, you know, were left behind
mm-hmm.
to be used because they knew that we were going to need to heal.
Excellent. In terms of doing these workshops, I mean, you just kind of covered it already. It seems like you've healed as well, but what do you bring to the community here? What sort of tools have you given them that are perhaps not in the toolbox you just described?
Well, I think what holds everything in place is a five-letter word called shame, okay? And when we, and this is not only for the Indigenous community, but I think it's for, you know, mankind as a whole, is mm-hmm. that we haven't created a safe space where we can talk about trauma, right? And, you know, 10 years ago, I was sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Yeah.
And the only thing I hadn't tried was honesty. And so, you know, I wrote the book.
Two of them.
Yeah. But the first book really changed my life and changed my direction and path. Because, you know, I wrote it for very selfish reasons. I just wanted to put it on paper, take one last look at it, put it in its rightful place. But what happened was I ran into a whole community of people who had been through the same thing that I'd been through. And that I inspired them by my words in the book to find their own voice
mm-hmm.
and to, you know, finally utter those words, me too, right? And then, you know, I went out and I started to educate myself and I was like, man, I can't believe that this is as prevalent as it is in society. And, you know, I always thought I was in the minority, but I'm actually in the majority.
Yeah.
You know,
I'll tell you right now, I'd be lying if I didn't have my own alcohol abuse
yeah.
problems.
Yeah.
But one thing I did have is family.
Yeah.
And it sounds like there's a lot of people who don't have that support
no.
system. So no. where do you go if your family's not available?
Yeah. Well, then you have to lean on community, right? And, you know, I always say we're only as sick as our secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not only do people have secrets, but communities have secrets. And they hold those secrets very tightly. I would say the smaller the community, the more the secrets.
Yeah.
Right? And you're not going to heal carrying around these secrets, right? Because, you know, I was carrying around a secret. You know, I was molested. You know, basically raped 150 times over a 2.5 year period. And guess what? I was sick physically, emotionally, spiritually sick. And, you know, then I started working in the Aboriginal community and they started teaching me about all these traditional healing methods and ways of healing. And all of a sudden, you know, my wife went to another dimension and went to another, you know.
That's good.
Stratosphere.
And here in the Laura Kootenay Band, I mean, Chief Jason Louie has no problems expressing that there has been problems here as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, you come here and you must be seeing a lot of the same things you've seen in those 400 other communities.
It's all the same.
Do you mind if I switch gears and go a little bit more hockey related?
Yeah, for sure.
In hockey, there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure, but there's also a lot of success. I'm talking at the NHL level. Mm-hmm. Have you seen substance abuse at that level from other hockey players who are maybe looking for a form of escapism? Mm-hmm. You know, day in, day out, they mm-hmm. train.
Well, I look at it more from a societal issue. Mm-hmm. We have a serious problem with people coping with emotional pain by using addiction. So whether that's alcohol, drugs, food, sex, gambling, anything that numbs us out from that pain that we experience. And so, you know, professional athletes have just the same problems as normal people do, right? And so, you know, I look at trauma, mental health, and addiction as the biggest epidemic on the planet. And it is the biggest riddle that we need to solve.
And it doesn't take any level of success to just wipe it away.
No. What do you think guys on Wall Street do all day? They snort cocaine all day long because they need to, you know what I mean?
And they need to be sharp, but they also need to feel good about themselves.
Exactly.
Even though they might be losing millions and making a few at the same time. Yeah. What a roller coaster that must be.
Exactly. And it's no different in, you know, the sports world, you know. We have families, we have wives, we have kids, you know, we have, I always say the only thing that's glamorous about being a professional athlete is the paycheck.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, ask my kids how many dance recitals, birthday parties, hockey games, soccer games that I missed because I was, you know.
That must have been hard.
Yeah, it's hard. And so now I got to go back and I got to repair the relationship with my kids because I missed so much, you know. And
are you a grandfather yet?
No, thank God.
Well, once you get there, maybe that's when.
Yeah, maybe that's when that'll take place and that'll happen. But it's.
Have you experienced racism in hockey at all? You know, people.
Oh, there's no question.
Being
an Aboriginal person, yeah, for sure.
And do you think it's still an issue in the NHL today? Or it seems like the NHL has got some things covered.
NHL got their ass kicked a few months ago.
Yeah.
You know, and
Bill Peters.
And they had to make changes, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think, you know, that's a good thing, right?
It is a good thing. Yeah. And it looks like the league is growing, which needs to happen.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we got kids from, you know, California. You know, you look at Austin Matthews, you know, number one pick overall. And where is he from? Phoenix, Arizona. There's no ice there. There's mm-hmm. no snow there. You know what I mean? So,
It's still going.
We've got a lot of different kids all over, you know, the world now that are, you know, playing hockey.
In terms of the year 2009, that must have been huge for you. And although you didn't get exactly what you wanted out of it, it seemed like your healing process, both physically, mentally, I mean, the journey was more important than the destination.
Absolutely, for sure. Yeah, that, I have to say, that's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. You know, I was sitting at the kitchen table, it was February, and, you know, I said to my wife at the time, I said, you know, I'm going to make a comeback. And she kind of looked at me, you know, I was 225 pounds and, you know, I didn't want to retire as a suspended player. Mm-hmm. So, you know, more importantly, you know, that was the mindset and that was the process that I needed to go through. And I was 4 years sober already.
Yeah.
At that time, you know? And so, it was amazing to get myself in shape again, you know, go through the protocol of the NHL to get reinstated, you know, then going down to Arizona and meeting with Mr. Bettman and Mr. Daly and, you know, them reinstating me. And then I flew back to Calgary that night, and the next day I was at training camp.
Wow.
With the Calgary Flames.
And you must have seen some familiar faces there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And how did they welcome you back?
Oh, they were loving it. You know, Jerome was great. You know, Jerome was a rookie, you know, when I was there. And so, yeah, it was, but in the 6 years I'd been gone, like, the game had changed, like, exponentially. And so, and what was really wild was, you know, that first game I played, you know, how do I end up, you know, how does the game end up tied after overtime and all of a sudden there's a shootout? There was no shootout when I was around.
No, so you got to experience something new. Yeah. And it looks like you got to capitalize a little bit.
Well, you know, when I stepped on the ice, you know, the whole stadium's just going bananas, right? And I'm thinking to myself, okay, like, I got to score. Right?
Yeah.
you know, like if this story's going
to... Before you had to score, but now you need to score.
I need to score for so many reasons. And, you know, when that puck crossed the line, it was like redemption, you know, that I got my life back and that, you know, all that stuff that happened at the end of my career was, you know, kind of vaporized and, you know...
And you got to retire as a Flame.
Exactly. And they could have opened up the Zamboni gates and I could have just got my truck and went home and I would have been, you know, happy and content, you know. So it was an amazing experience and something that, you know, that I was happy to, you know, partake in. And, you know, it was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, I'll tell you, in those 9 months that I was trying to get ready. And, you know, the bonus part was, you know, after I got reinstated, that I actually got to go to training camp, which was kind of, you know, wasn't expected, but, you know, it was all part of it.
I don't want to keep you too long from the community that, you know, you're coming to visit. Just two final questions. Number one, what do you think of the Battle of Alberta?
Yeah, I'm glad that it's been reignited. You know, I think it's been dormant for way too long. And, you know, I think the players finally realized the importance of this, you know, incredible rivalry that these two cities have had for so many years, you know, and
it's not just a rivalry. It seems like there's almost a little bit of love to hate you camaraderie too.
For sure. And that's what great rivalries are made of. You know, back when I was in the middle of it, you know, like, we were trying to hurt each other every game. Like, it was violent.
Yeah.
It was nasty. But, you know, as a professional athlete, those are the games you want to play in. That's where you make a name for yourself, is in those, you know, is in those battles. And it ain't for the faint at heart.
No. You know? So. Final question. Who do you think's going to win the cup this year?
Oh, God.
It's the million dollar question.
You know, I think all 16 teams that do get a ticket to the NHL playoffs have a chance to win.
And we saw St. Louis do it.
You know, there's so much parity in the league, and I think that's what they were trying to accomplish, you know, by inserting the salary cap, was they wanted, you know, parity. And, you know, you look at, you know, the standings in the West, like, it's only separated by, what, five or six points?
It was 1 point before the bye week.
I know.
1 point.
It's crazy.
And that concludes the interview that I was so lucky to have with hockey legend and, of course, big heart Theo Fleury. Once again, big thank you to Laura Kootenay Band for hosting this event. I'm Jensen Shields with MyCrestandNow.com. Thank you so much for joining us.